You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeter. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Steeter.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter.
If I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Wednesday, October 15th, 2014. My name is Sam Steeter. This is the three-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, Allison Kilkenny, Jamie Kilstein, Citizen Radio, on News Fail. Also on the program today, CIA study revealed, saying what the CIA does not work. Sometimes it does. Well, sometimes. Yeah, unintended consequences, indeed. Chances of being shot by a police officer if you are a young black male is only 21 times larger than if you are a young white male. Only 21 times. But there's hope. Apparently, it seems to be trending upwards. Unbelievable. A second case of Ebola from the treatment of the first patient in Texas. You know, we should just privatize these hospitals. I'm sure that would work out much better. Cut more of the CDC. Also, Vatican says, whoops, we didn't really mean to say that we like gay people. We're just going to back that up a little bit. Nikki Haley has an interesting defense of the Confederate flag. All that and more on today's program.
Is there ever a non-interesting defense of the Confederate flag?
This one is actually, she's reaching a little bit. It seems to me. Extra interesting. We will get to all that and more on today's program. Just a reminder, folks. We've been priced out of this office. We're going to make the move to Brooklyn. We've got to come up with a new opening for the show where I don't say in the metaphorical but not literal, or I should say in the literal, not metaphorical shadow in the New York Times. We're going to be working on that. We may have to take a couple of days off just to come up with that.
Maybe we could say like the literal but not metaphorical shadow of the island of Manhattan. I don't know.
Yeah. All right, we'll work on it.
We will obviously definitely be taking a couple of days to work on that.
We will be taking a couple of days off over the next couple of weeks for the move, so bear with us. Let me get to this story before we get to Allison and Jamie, because this one I found somewhat irrelevant but also sort of funny. A Jefferson County Recorder of Deeds. This is in Hillsboro, Missouri. Debbie Dunnigan said on Tuesday that she used a poor choice of words on a post on her personal Facebook page that some are weirdly interpreting as an attack on President Barack Obama. Now, of course, we very often criticize President Obama on this program. Let's weigh in and see what her Facebook post said. I have a question for all my friends. I'm making up her accent,
but I got Southern.
I have a question for all my friends who served or are currently serving in our military. Having not put on a uniform nor taken any type of military oath, there has to be something that I'm just not aware of. but I cannot and do not understand why no actions being taken against our domestic enemy. I know he's supposedly the commander-in-chief, but the Constitution gives you the authority. What am I missing? Thank you for your bravery, and may God keep you safe. So she apparently, she's running for re-election. That this became a bit of an election issue, and she said, I meant no ill intent toward the president. I meant no ill intent toward anybody. Well, first of all, I don't know how anyone could interpret that that was ill intent to anybody. I mean, it was pretty clearly about the president. I don't mean personally. I mean a bloodless coup.
Yeah. Oh, wait, is it a coup? I can never keep that one straight.
She went on to say, something innocent and simple got twisted into a disaster because it's an election. But here's my favorite thing. Remember, she's running now in Hillsborough, Missouri.
Best part.
As for how it could affect her chances for re-election, Dunnigan said, I think it could hurt as much as it could help. All right, we're going to take a break when we come back.
She's absolutely right.
Absolutely
about that.
Right.
No question.
We're going to take a break when we come back. Citizen Radio peeps on News Fail. We are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report. On the phone, ladies and gentlemen, a pleasure to welcome back to the program Allison Kilkenny, Jamie Kilstein, Citizen Radio on their book, News Fail. Guys, welcome.
Thank you for being one of probably three shows that will have us on.
You know what? You just stole my first question.
Yeah.
Am I the only is this the only show you're allowed on now?
So we were on this show. We might do Democracy Now. And then the one host from MSNBC who talks to us, Melissa Harris Perry, I think we're on Sunday.
And that's pretty much it.
And then that's it for the,
actually.
For the rest
of our lives. That's not that bad. I mean, come on. You're on cable television. You're on the biggest independent radio / TV show in the country.
And it could be worse. The
And then, of course, the Majority Report, which is, I mean, watch out. I would stabilize your Barnes & Noble and Amazon rankings right now, guys.
You know who Reza Aslan, amidst all of the angry atheists tweeting him, emailed me to make sure I was doing your show. He was very excited and wanted, and said very nice things about you.
Wow. That's I wonder how Michael worked that out. That's
I'm looking out for you, man.
Well, it's, you know, I was also going to start just doing a morning zoo radio voice. Have you guys gone? Are you getting any commercial radio at all, or no?
Oh God!
Oh,
no.
Certainly not.
No, I think if you do a morning zoo radio voice, I think that means Allison, as a woman, is required to leave the room. Right?
I go make a sandwich. Right?
You go make when a sandwich.
Happens? Right.
Yeah, and then I give sports scores.
Right. Look at these guys with their sandwich jokes. That's I love it.
Repertoire.
Jamie Kilstein, Allison Kilkenny. How did you guys manage that? You guys are married, right? But you have the same first couple letters in your name. That's crazy.
Tone it down, sir.
So it's been a while since we talked. Congratulations on the book. That's awesome.
Thanks.
It seems to be doing pretty well, too.
Yeah, well, our fan base, our maniacs who listen to the show are really wonderful and very, very loyal. And we're so excited that the book was coming out. So it's really, I think, primarily a credit to them. They're just very loyal.
And I mean, like, also to like, I mean, our editor, man, like when we walked in to Simon & Schuster, we didn't have a pitch. We said we want to talk about like Palestine and the NSA and factory farming and feminism and stuff like that. We didn't have any structure whatsoever. And then we said, and we also want to literally criticize the only people that could have us on to promote the book. And right. we're just going to like take a dump all over them. And she was like, all right, yeah, do it. And I think, you know, just like you guys, she saw just that our fan base was really cool. Now, by tomorrow, we may run out of fans who have bought the book,
yeah.
and this is all going to come crashing down. But for now, it's really cool to like, yeah, I mean, a lot of our listeners listened to us when we started Citizen Radio and we're homeless. So it's like, this is like a big deal for all of us. Like, it's kind of like
yeah, it's
celebratory.
Sort of, it's everybody's book in a way. We would not in any way have a show or a book without our supporters
or a career.
I mean, a career,
you
yeah.
were even talking about this last night at the book signing as a journalist.
Oh yeah. Like most of the left wing publications that we all read and like don't pay living salaries and probably don't pay their interns. So it's really hard to piece together a salary as a freelancer. And I would not be able to survive without Citizen Radio.
Yeah.
And now Allison, you've like quit from just about, I mean, you have
yeah.
quit from more places than most people work, I think, at this point.
I'm really good at quitting places, yes.
Yeah, she
Thank
has a,
you for noticing.
She has a section on her resume, has quit from The Nation, has quit from
In These Times.
Yeah.
Has quit from, yeah, it could go on and on.
My can we talk about that? What happened?
Yeah, so In These Times was for kind of personal reasons. Some colleagues of mine were being treated really, really badly, and I just didn't like how management was treating them, so I left. The Nation, you know, there's a lot of great people over at The Nation. Michelle Goldberg's also over at The Nation.
Just to be clear, she's not one of the great people?
She's not one of the great people.
Gotcha.
Eric Alterman is over at The Nation.
Great.
Not so much.
Got it.
And I really felt that The Nation wasn't really representing what I believe, you know, the lefty values are, which is, you know, standing up for sex workers, if you call yourself a feminist, which is standing up for Palestinians, any oppressed people, really.
Not writing like bizarre pieces defending racists and getting a lot of money for it.
Yeah, I am mystified by Michelle Goldberg's presence at The Nation. I really am. And it was becoming a distraction from the really good work people were doing. Whenever you would say, I write for The Nation, the first thing out of people's mouths is, what is up with Michelle Goldberg?
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm not her publicist. I don't want to be talking about this. Yeah. I hate that the publication she's, you know, started to represent The Nation.
Yeah. And there are awesome people like young writers like Michael Denzel Smith is one of my favorite writers.
He's wonderful. Yeah.
Dave Zirin is one of my
yeah.
favorite right. writers. Like they still do really good work.
Yeah,
it's
definitely.
Just but it's like any place. Right. It's like the really, really good people never really get treated as well as the ones who will kind of spout more mainstream hateful rhetoric. I mean,
yeah,
it happens
and,
a comedy with everything.
And I know we like to think that we're, you know, the diverse party, but we're not. You know, I've been in the publication meetings with all white people. Most of them went to Yale and Harvard. And they're not really connected, you know, like I think Michael and Dave are two of the rare examples of, you know, progressives working at a mainstream or a, let's say, more prominent left-wing publication who do get that, who are saying, like, you know, we need to make a concentrated effort to be more diverse.
Yeah.
But you would be shocked. You know, a lot of the leaders at the left-wing publications are, you know, really antiquated when it comes to stuff like that.
I don't know that I would be that shocked. But to be
oh,
honest with you,
I was trying to be so gentle.
I mean, I've certainly back in the day have run into sort of that problem. I mean, you know, and I'm not sure of the specifics of what you're talking about. I mean, I know that one of the things, you know, I mean, I feel from the perspective of this show, one of the things that's very difficult for us is to have, you know, a genuine diversity in the context of both what we produce, but also in terms of what the guests are. And it's difficult, but you would imagine, I mean, I imagine there's challenges too, from the perspective of a magazine that has, you know, that has maybe somewhat limited resources. We have very little resources. It's difficult, but But good for you for you know, I guess.
I do think there's a difference between, say, like podcasting budgets, which is, yeah, we feel you. Like, we don't have money to have staff members either. But, you know, when you have a very large office space in a really expensive area of the city, when you're not paying your interns, but you can have, like, you know, fundraising cruises and stuff like that.
Well, and they pay their interns now after, like, the but great because, intern strike. Of,
yeah, the interns, to their great credit, organized.
And, I mean, I should also point out, with diversity, it's like we don't have many guests anymore. When we do, they're either, like, my comedian friends who are usually white, or Michael Denzel Smith, or, like, Jana Mock was one of our last guests. And we try and do our best. But I think the reason there is more responsibility of places like The Nation or MSNBC or CNN to have more diverse guests, besides their audience is much bigger, it's if we were doing a report bashing Palestinians and didn't have a Palestinian on, or if we were doing a report asking if Mike Brown was no angel and didn't have any black people on, that would be one thing. Right. I mean, we're at least, if we don't have guests, we're two privileged white people, but we're, I think, at least on the right side. What gets really, really dangerous is when The Nation is writing pieces against BDS or against Palestine and won't have as many or any Palestinian voices for a long period of time, or like CNN and stuff like that will be talking about race with a bunch of white guys.
Or writing pieces about living wages when you don't pay your journalists living wages.
Yes.
So what media do you guys read these days? I mean, who's doing it right?
Yeah, so I know it's cliche at this point, but Democracy Now! is a great, great show.
That's like our go-to every day.
There are fantastic independent journalists that do great work every day. Michael Denzel Smith is great. Sean King's doing a lot of great work right now in St. Louis, documenting police brutality there. Annalikas Miller. You know, there are a ton of independent journalists.
There are a lot of really great just people on Twitter who post things that I've never seen. I mean, so many websites, even our favorite ones, are like problematic, that I kind of try to follow like writers. I really like Lindy West when it comes to feminism stuff. I really like Jessica Valente.
Well, I think that's why Twitter's great. You're not necessarily subscribing to the site. It's like you get to pick and choose the best elements of each publication.
Yeah, obviously, like Scahill and Sharif do like indispensable work when it comes to like foreign policy stuff. But yeah, I mean, we're kind of trying to get it like real time via social media, Democracy Now!, stuff like that. But I mean, on the news, we pretty much just have it on in the background to occasionally mock Chuck Todd.
Right.
Like, we don't, like, I'm not learning anything anymore. I mean, Melissa Harris Perry will have great panels on LGBT and race issues, and feminism issues as well. So when that's going on, we'll watch that.
Yeah,
but that's really it when it comes to cable.
She has the most diverse panels from all of the news networks, I think.
Fox?
Yeah, believe it or not.
Fox
more diverse than Fox.
Fox has white guys and bald eagles, so that's kind of diverse.
They got both. you know, it's interesting because I told you, Jamie, to send me an advanced copy of the book. I mean, obviously, I pre-ordered on Amazon, but I did not get an advanced copy of the book. So all I did was read. You screwed
Jamie's
up, buddy.
Shouting that he sent one to you.
No, you did not.
We did, but, though. I don't know what happened. We'll send you another one.
That's all right. the book came out yesterday, and now I got it, right? So
yes.
And it's sitting on my Kindle device. But I did read, you know, it was funny because I read there's some excerpts online and some like Google Books and whatnot. But it was interesting. I want to talk about Jon Stewart a little bit because.
Sure.
It was funny because, you know, I had problems with Jon Stewart a long time ago, and almost have turned on some level. Sort of almost a pivot, almost exactly opposite from where you guys, but it did pivot around that 2007, you know, let's all get together and do nothing for no reason.
The outdoor rally event.
Yeah, the rally just drove me nuts.
Right.
But talk about that.
Yeah, so a huge caveat, and we mentioned this in the book, we used to be huge, huge fans of The Daily Show and concede that The Daily Show at one time played a really huge, important role. I think that's indisputable, and most people would agree on that. Our problem with The Daily Show is sort of what it evolved into, which is sort of an outlet for apathy. The Rally to Restore Sanity is the best example of that, I think, where you had thousands of young people gathered. They were really excited. It had all this potential to be this great moment, and you had this ridiculous mantra of caring is lame, you know, and Kid Rock performed for some reason.
Literally performed a song that's mantra was like, we can't do it if in, why bother trying, things are bad.
Yeah, and like we had a lot of... We had a lot of young people contact us, and they were really excited to go to this thing, and they were heartbroken afterwards.
We had a dude tweet us today,
yeah,
who said he like flew all the way out there. I mean, this was an opportunity where the left had so many young, excited people, and like, yeah, again, caveat too, because man, these questions so far, people are not going to want to buy our book. Why do you hate The Nation and The Daily Show? But yeah, like, I mean, Jon Stewart was one of the main reasons I got into comedy, and you know, I started to like figure out stuff about politics watching The Daily Show. And the bigger indictment, because there are just going to be good writers over there who just want to be funny, and that's fine. And that's not The Daily Show's fault. The bigger problem is that when the media, when there's no actual progressive news outlet, and you have people like Bill O'Reilly and stuff saying that The Daily Show is as radical and left-wing as you can get, and then they make fun of Occupy Wall Street. They have a rally where, I mean, those flyers literally said, do you hate going to protests and losing your voice? Come here. And it was like just making fun of. So when you, our audience, for the most part, I mean, there's a lot of really smart political people, fucking PhDs, journalists, all that stuff. But most of our audience are young kids or people from like, you know, 17 to like mid 30s. Who are really sweet and funny and smart, but were not political until they found our show. And there's a lot of people like that because they watch the news and they see the same old white guys leading us into the same wars and they go, I don't trust this. So they have this moment where they could be energized to be political. And the Rally to Restore Sanity was that moment.
Yeah.
But if you hear, that's as left as you can go, and they say protesting is dumb – you know, there's a part of you where you go, okay, well, I don't want to be a radical. I don't want to do that.
Well, and also to his credit, Jon Stewart, I mean, he has said this time and time again, I'm not a journalist, I'm a comedian. And to me, he was basically pleading with his audience saying, please don't use me as news.
Yeah.
Please don't do that.
And now you have him taking meetings with Meet the Press. Again, not him, but that's how much people see him as the news. And like, look, we are not buzzkills. We are not those progressives that are like, you're not a progressive if you smile or like television. Like, I proudly was watching The Voice before doing this and was angry I had to do the interview.
No, I think that's the main point we're making. We're like, The Daily Show is still very funny sometimes, but it's
John Oliver's new show is fucking great and
so
progressive.
Good.
Right.
So good. Yeah. So,
yeah.
But it's dangerous when people think that's as left wing as you can get, because then when Jon Stewart is making fun of Occupy, they think, oh, well, I guess Occupy Wall Street is dumb.
Or like yucking it up with.
Let me ask you this. Do you think that Stewart changed or that you guys changed? I mean, because I think like, you know, over time, I think that you guys have become a little bit more nuanced. I know, Jamie, you write in the book about this. Or maybe Allison writes about you in the book about this. I can't tell you. Obviously, you wrote it together, but
and we didn't send you a copy.
But this, you didn't send me a copy, so I'm just making this up. but I mean, I wonder if you know because you know from my evolution in terms of you know, and I was vaguely friendly with John back in the day when I was in that world more, but. You know, Janine and I, back when we launched the original Majority Report on Air America, we were very frustrated with him, you know, in 2004.
Oh, interesting.
That, you know, because for a lot of the same reasons that you are. And I think the non-protest for me was sort of, this was the culmination and was indicative of what I had always felt problematic about. About his show. I mean, you know, there were times back where he would have Wolfowitz on. He would have these people on, and or Crystal, and you know, more or less give him a pass.
Yeah.
It was the only way he was going to get these people to come on, I guess. But, you know, and I, you know, that's fine. He wants to be a comedian, not a news guy. But, you know, it's like a, an athlete saying I'm not a role model. Guess what? Right. Sometimes you don't get to choose these things.
Totally. Sure. And I'm so glad you said that because it is one of those chapters. I mean, man, we wrote so many like quote unquote controversial things. And this was the one that I'm like, oh, why'd we do this? Like I started like backpedaling on this one. And
well, don't worry. He was never going to have you on anyways.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. But I'm glad you said that because like it made me feel sort of nuts because it does bring joy to a lot of smart, funny people.
Yes.
And you're right. Like, I don't care that one time he called out Mike Huckabee on being a bigot. The fact is, you've had Mike Huckabee on more than five times. And when people say that, even if you're disagreeing, when you are jovial, like doing it like it's an Abbott and Costello bit, but it's about the lives of LGBT people, that is at least subconsciously, given, you know, he can't be that bad. He keeps going on The Daily Show. And I would rather, okay, if you're a comedy show, great. Don't have the architects of wars that have killed millions of people on unless you're ready to grill them. He has every right to have Paul Rudd on every episode. I would love that. but if, yeah, you're right. If you're going to give them a pass and you go, well, we're a comedy show. Well, that interview wasn't funny. Just don't have them on.
Yeah. Well, and I feel like the John Oliver new show addresses a lot of that where he, thus far, he hasn't had any guests on.
Or he had like terrible Fareed.
Oh, Fareed Zakaria.
And Right Said Fred.
Never mind.
Well, you know, but it's funny. But here's the maybe the, I don't know if this is the irony of it, but on some level, I think, you know, I reached the point a couple years ago where I was like, well, you can take any a net positive where you can get it. I mean, that's sort of the irony, you know, in terms of my evolution about the thing, because you wouldn't have John Oliver. You wouldn't have, you know, I think Colbert's show, in my mind, was always far more political in many respects. And I think he could do that because he was playing a character to a certain degree. And I think people who would come on weren't really sure just how whether he was joking or not with his questions of them.
It was a little weird, though, because sometimes he was playing a character. I feel like he completely dropped the character when he was interviewing Assange.
He did.
And he got really aggressive. And I felt like that was Stephen Colbert saying, you're endangering our troops.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely dropped
her. He's a pretty – I think he's a lot more maybe I didn't see that interview, to be honest with you. I mean, I don't have time to watch any TV anymore. But he's, I mean, I, from knowing him from back in the day as well, his politics are extremely to the left. And awesome. I think more so than I think that he leads on, and I'm glad he's going to have a big forum to sort of subtly shove it in that direction. I guess I'm at the point now where, you know, any net positive for me is a net positive. It's weird. Maybe I'm just getting close to retirement. And that's
no, I mean, we're the same way in the sense that, like, I think there's a difference. What I desperately didn't want people who don't know us – I mean, people who know us know what the book's going to be like because we're there's no one we're harder on than ourselves. We're very self-aware. We're very self-deprecating. Our views are always evolving. We're very silly and filthy and, I mean, inappropriate and stuff like that. But what I didn't want it to seem is – two bitter lefties shitting on everything that brings people joy. Because I see those people on Twitter every day, and they're miserable, and it's terrible.
Yeah.
Whereas anytime someone gets successful, they're a sellout or they're horrible or whatever. When The Daily Show was on, holy shit, it was so good. And when they were holding the Bush administration accountable, and I think it was really important. And I want more of that. I would love The Daily Show to get great.
Yeah, and like, you know, mental health and comedy and laughing are all really important, essential parts of all of our lives. But the thing is, And I've heard Jon Stewart mention this in interviews as he's gotten older. He's expressed that he feels a little more jaded these days, a little more tired. And that's understandable. I mean, the show was around throughout the W years. They were really hopeful for the Obama years. Yes. They were disappointed throughout the Obama years. So I totally get Jon being burnt out. But I think what would be unfortunate is if young progressives were watching that show and watching Jon now these days and thinking, oh yeah, I guess protesting and passion is lame, and and I shouldn't do that. I shouldn't be an activist.
Yeah,
I get the sense. I mean, I haven't watched him a lot, but I get the sense that maybe sort of in that jadedness, he's actually become a little bit more. He's been a little bit less cautious, it seems to me. But it's hard to know. It's hard to know these things. But.
Yeah, yeah, it's true. We haven't watched in a while. We've just been watching Jon's show, and that's once a week, so that's easier for old us.
And let's give me your sense on MSNBC. I mean, I think, you know, it's been ratings wise, it's fascinating. Obviously, the big stories that have been coming out about it is that it's hemorrhaging viewers.
Yeah.
I have to, you know, full disclosure, I am a contributor who's on extremely rarely, but.
Fancy.
What's that? I don't have quite one of the fancy deals. But
I'm picturing you just like on the payroll, but like shoved in like Lawrence O'Donnell's electric closet. Like.
I'm not actually on the payroll per se, but right. I get a babysitting stipend essentially when I go on there because I couldn't do it for a net loss. But
yeah.
It seems to, I don't know. I mean, it's interesting. You know, when I started doing this professionally, there was nothing. I mean, it was so bad that now it's just sort of, and I'm just talking about the media landscape in general. Now it just seems sort of droopy and sad and bifurcated because there was no YouTube when we started Air America. YouTube did not exist.
Right.
I mean, you just contemplate all the technology. People were streaming audio through real audio. I don't even know if you remember what that was, but it was essentially a virus that would occasionally give sound out of your computer.
Yeah. I believe real video was the first time I tried to see a naked lady, and my father still, I'm 32 years old, whenever we go home to visit him, I am not allowed to use the computer because he claims one time when I was younger trying to watch porn on real video, it gave them a virus and they had to throw out the computer.
Yeah.
It's not impossible. I mean, real audio was impossible to get rid of.
The first time I brought Allison home to introduce them, I was like, okay, we're going to use the computer to MapQuest some directions. And he was like, Jamie is not allowed to use the computer outside of like my stream of vision because he downloaded porn and ruined the family computer. I mean, I think that very similar to what we said about The Daily Show. What's so dangerous about MSNBC is this myth that it is this like radical Noam Chomskyan type channel when like 17 hours of it are Joe Scarborough. I think the reason that left-wing media has failed and that people have flocked to the internet is because Fox News is right-wing. CNN and MSNBC are kind of right-wing, occasionally liberal. And the problem is while trying to be like, yeah, this is the liberal network, this is that, we still are like, but I don't want conservatives to be mad. And we still sort of pander, which you will not see on Fox News.
Now, I also just think it was a mistake to ever think we could match Fox News in terms of size and corporate backing, because a lot of what, you know, being left wing means is holding business accountable, and that's perceived as being anti-corporate. So I don't think we're ever going to be able to challenge them on the level of Fox News. I think what's going to happen is what's been happening, which is it'll look more like guerrilla warfare online, you know, like multiple alternative outlets broadcasting news from on the ground using Twitter and stuff like that. It'll be much more guerrilla like that.
Yeah, and also we talked about this in the book where, I mean, even when Phil Donahue was killing it in the ratings and questioning the Iraq war, he still got fired from MSNBC. And the problem is, one of the themes of our show and one of the themes of the book that I'm really proud of is it's not about supporting teams. It's not about supporting the Democratic Party to us. It's about supporting and standing up for your values, right? So if I'm anti-war, but the Democrat is not anti-war, just because I voted Democrat doesn't mean I'm going to be like, I guess I'm pro-war now. You can be nuanced. I like WikiLeaks. Julian Assange appears to be a rapist piece of shit. I cannot like Julian Assange, but I can also support WikiLeaks. I can like certain Democrats and fight them when they do something that we don't feel is democratic. And so MSNBC, people think it is the liberal news, but in reality, it's just kind of like the Democrats' lapdog. And there's a huge difference because the Democrats in office are still supporting wars, supporting big oil, supporting these banks and stuff like that. So that doesn't make MSNBC liberal. It just means that they are currently the ones defending the less worst politicians.
Right. It's very much, I mean, it's sort of old school to say this, but it's very much an establishment, not inside outside divide. And Allison, I mean, just to go back to your point about the nature of our media having to be guerrilla, that was one thing, you know, back in one of the reasons I think that Air America had troubles getting the big donor money on some level was because at the end of the day, radio in particular, I mean, free AM radio, as almost impossible as it is to listen, it more often than not is, you know, populist because it's completely free. I mean, and it's changing to a certain extent. More people have access because of mobile phones and whatnot to the internet. But, you know, but radio for a long time is completely agnostic to how much money you have.
Right.
Because it's incredibly free. And there was always there's always going to be that tension, I think, with any big corporate enterprise in terms of media and populism. And I think that's, you know, that's why when you look at something like Democracy Now, it's so incredibly impressive.
Yeah, totally. And that's why the issue of internet access is so important and net neutrality. And thankfully, net neutrality seems to be on a lot more people's radars these days. But for a long time, progressives sort of slept on that issue because internet is so ubiquitous now. It just seems like water or air. It's just something we're always going to have. And it's not that. Millions of Americans don't have access to it. It's unaffordable to a lot of Americans.
Yeah.
And if we allow the government to, and in major corporations, to determine who gets fast access, who gets access at all, then we're in a lot of trouble. Because I do think that progressives can fight back when it comes to independent media if we maintain this fairly level playing field on the internet. But if we lose that, then we're in a tremendous amount of trouble.
Yeah, and politician-wise, when it comes to money, you know, just like they have, like, the devil and angel on, like, television characters' shoulders, Allison was always, like, my little, like, bitter realist on my shoulder where, like, there was a long time where I was like, Obama may be making these mean decisions, but he doesn't really want to, right? He's just playing politics. And because he's so nice and his daughters and little dog are adorable. And, you know, it took me definitely a while to be like, oh, wait, are the Democrats pandering to these people because they're claiming they want to win elections or because that big oil military industrial complex? I mean, they're just getting so much money from them, which is, you know, I mean, election reform. It sounds so boring, but it's so important. Campaign finance reform, all that stuff. And yeah, I mean, you gotta look where the money is. And when it comes to media, I mean, before we were friends with Jeremy Scaho, who was like nice enough to give us the only blurb we needed. Like, we asked a bunch of people for blurbs and he gave us a blurb so awesome and so long that the back of our book is just literally like a short story from Jeremy Scaho. I went to one of his talks, and I asked him about independent media. This is, I mean, Citizen Radio is pretty new. And I said, you know, when it comes to independent media, do you want to try to compete with these big networks, or do you want to take their audience away? And kind of like Ali creepily mentioned with Guerrilla Warfare, you want to do both, is what he said, is you want to make so much noise that they are forced to cover the stories you're talking about. Right. And it's not just if you have a podcast. I mean, that's why Ferguson, that's why Steubenville got talked about the way it did, and still poorly. I mean, you still had Candy Crowley on CNN sympathizing with rapists. But the reason that these stories even got attention was because our listeners, your listeners, people on Twitter, people on the ground were so loud on Twitter and were such little electric insurgents that it forced the news to talk about it because that's what we were all talking about. So, like, I don't give a shit if people find out about Ferguson or Steubenville from us or from CNN, but we just want them talking about it and as many people hearing about it as
and
possible.
And oftentimes these days, that's how it goes. You know, a story blows up on Twitter and then CNN picks up on it. So, it, you know, these ridiculous people who say, like, quote-unquote Twitter activism, whatever that means, doesn't work, that's absurd. Of course it works. If people are tweeting about something enough, the mainstream news eventually notices.
Oh, and I should say, I mean, Allison and I, when I say from us, I mean – so I'm learning so much and hearing so many stories I never would have heard if I didn't follow Black Twitter and some of these great journalists of color, or like a bunch of feminists I never knew about. Like, you know, I mean, I didn't know all this stuff and I considered myself like very left wing. But you realize again how like white, straight, cis, even the left-wing media is.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I followed Black Twitter for a day, and I'm like, oh, these people have a really bad – what's happening? This is terrible. Someone should talk about this. And I considered myself very progressive and anti-racist and stuff like that. So it's definitely important to, like, diversify where you get your stories from as well.
All right. I got to ask you one final question that I – literally, I mean, I somehow stumbled onto a Alec Baldwin and Russell Brand on the Max Kaiser show.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
I know. And you almost can't watch. You almost can't not watch that when you see that. but Alec Baldwin actually had a fairly interesting question that had never even occurred to me to ask or to answer. But I'm going to try it out for the first time on you guys.
Okay.
Okay.
You guys have been elected joint president in a strange twist of events. What and you also have unilateral authority. What's the one thing you would do? I mean, I didn't agree with Baldwin's premise that people are arguing about pursuing too many different issues. We need one singular issue to overcome, et cetera, et cetera. I don't necessarily buy that. But if there was one thing that you think is the most important.
Okay.
Reform.
Yep.
That we could have in our politics. What would it be?
Well, the first thing I would do is plot a coup to overthrow Allison and take my presidency back
God
where it rightfully belongs.
Damn it. Yeah. God damn it.
So that would be my number one. I really think
universal living wage. Boom.
Oh, nice.
All right.
Yeah, that's huge. Mine's
no,
a
you
little
can't take hers, dude.
yeah, my coup has already been. That's my coup. I'm like, whatever you say, sweetie. Yeah, so mine's going to be a little more jumbled and probably naive, but I think that if there was a way for the American citizens to hear independent media and to be able to vote and just hear from the Ralph Naders of the world, the Amy Goodmans of the world, as much as we hear from the Wolf Blitzers and the Mitt Romneys. And the reason is when you look at polling, there are a lot of conservatives, libertarians, progressives, and liberals who are against the war, who are against the bank bailout, who are against the war on drugs. There are a lot of Republican women that think that women should have full access to birth control, to, you know, safe abortions. And when you watch these poll or when you watch the news, when you listen to these candidates, you would never know that the majority of people don't want war. It just seems like everyone wants perpetual war. And I think that it's really easy for people to just bash Americans as stupid or bash the South as just trash or whatever. But I really think if you gave people that option, there are a lot more people who don't even know how progressive they are because they don't – it doesn't seem like a reality. They think that Medicare for All is like Russian social or communism, and it's not. The majority of people would want that, but it's never presented to them as an option, even from the very left-wing MSNBC, the very left-wing Barack Obama, the very left-wing Daily Show, etc. I mean, I really just think if people had access to this information, maybe we could do something different. Maybe.
All right. Fair enough. Allison was a little more succinct.
Well, during our presidency, I'll be the one who's talking, obviously.
Yeah, I'll be the Joe Biden just like fumbling in the background, accidentally supporting same-sex marriage on TV.
All right, guys. The book is Newsfail. We'll put a link up at majority.fm. Of course, it's wearecitizenradio.com, right?
Yeah, yep. And just with the book, like so many of these conservative authors on the bestsellers have these like homophobic mega churches buy like 10,000 copies. I mean, our book, this is like all word of mouth. It's starting to do well already, but like we really want to try to sort of be like the little progressive engine that could,
yeah.
and prove people wrong and show you can do it. So fuck, man, even if you don't like us, just buy it and throw it out.
Give it to your favorite mega church.
We actually have fans doing that. It's awesome.
All right, folks. All right, thanks so much for joining us, guys.
Bye.
All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break, head into the fun half of the program. Although the first half was pretty fun today. Here's mine. I'm going to answer that question right now. Confiscatory. Did I say that right? Confiscatory taxation across the board, just basically lop off, you know, how like a compressor on sound takes off the high band. Mm-hmm. Just incredibly high marginal tax rates over I don't know what, a couple million dollars across the board, whether it's capital gains or actual wages. Just do it right there. I think that takes care. I really do think that's the it's not going to happen. I don't know how you would ever get there, but I mean, we're not going to have a dual presidency either. So but I think that's actually once you take the super high-end profit motive out of everything, I think a lot of things fall into place at that point.
Yeah.
Why are you going to lobby so hard if there's really no value in making those obscene profits? Why are you going to impact the it's really, I guess, in some levels, it is the complete anti-libertarian solution.
Total anti-libertarian solution.
But it's not communism. It's just a really basically a return to the Great Compression on some levels, when we had 90% marginal, 90% was the highest marginal tax rate, 91% I think it was, during the Eisenhower administration. If you were making over, I think at that time, maybe $200,000 to $300,000, which would translate, I don't know, into what today, a couple million?
I just say common sense solutions for modern problems.
That's something what like that's that. Maybe what we should rebrand the show. All right, folks. 646-257-3920 is the number. 646-257-3920 is the number. You can also IM us directly via the app at Majority App. Pick up the app. It's completely free. MajorityApp.com. Coming up in the funner half. Oh, we're going to talk about the fun story of how the CIA actually did a report on the efficacy of arming rebel groups and insurgent groups.
Yep.
And when we say arming, we're saying the CIA arming them. Guess what? It doesn't work.
Surprise, surprise.
It doesn't work. That's the joke at the end of it. Although, the way this piece was written, there was one part. You've got to hear this to believe it. We will also talk about Nikki Haley's really interesting defense of the Confederate flag. And if you walk it, if you're getting a job at a Jimmy John's, make sure you read the fine print on that contract. All that and more coming up. Folks, not unlike Citizen Radio, this show is completely funded by our listeners. And we do have a staff, Matt and Michael, who are arguably paid. Right? I mean, it's in coffee from justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. The best coffee you can get, and the best company that actually produces this stuff.
The best who ever did.
You get 10% off with the coupon code MAJORITY.
I like that.
And you can buy the Majority Report blend. What's that?
I like that gorilla imagery, though.
I think they're
right even beyond like progressive and independent media. That is where everything's going.
I think that's where it's going.
And you might, and if you preserve things like net neutrality, you actually do have a little bit more power to directly influence the kind of media you get involved with.
I don't want to pat myself on the shoulder. However,
what about the back?
Or my back.
Right.
I don't want to pat myself anywhere, frankly.
Really?
But 20 some odd years ago, sitting in a three-quarter way place in Cambridge, Massachusetts, back when I was doing comedy.
That's where it all goes back to, though.
That's right.
When the brainstorms.
Occasionally experiment with marijuana.
Substances.
And was drinking too much, probably. And writing copious notes to myself. We had a UHF television. I mean, just a regular over-air television. I had developed a channel changer that involved a long wooden dowel and two other pieces of stick, and I would sit in my one chair in the was not a very big apartment, about the size of this office, maybe a little smaller, and it was quite clear what was happening with media at that time, that it was all becoming self-funded. There was a channel called Channel One that would buy up UHF time, present programming that was actually sort of interesting. They bought all the ad time, and it was all like call a single lady ads. But I was like, this is where it's all going. We're going to, you know, there's not going to be just three channels. There's going to be a whole sea of channels, and you're going to be able to make like a middle-class living doing entertainment. At that point, the internet, I don't even know if the internet was really just happening, 91, 92.
Wasn't the kind of like
I didn't
broad
have
access to the internet like 95, 96?
I think so.
Like America Online, yes. Netscape, that type yes. of thing?
But I think it was awareness of it. Computers, personal computers were only 5 or 6 years old, you know, right, in terms of their ubiquity. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back after this.
Sit in a bouquet.